Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK, Wednesday edition. And Sean Carey here. In just a second, we'll hear from Steve in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lots of ways to get in contact with us on Facebook. Give us a like. On Twitter, give us a follow. Our email, stevejones@wkok.com. And you can also subscribe to our podcast. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcast App, Google Play. It's where you get those podcasts. Just search Steve Jones Show, hit subscribe. And once we air them live on WKOK, we'll drop them right into your smartphone and tablets. You can listen to them anytime, anywhere. And you always have access to 3 months of shows on our homepage at stevejonesshow.com. So we'll be with you live till 5. Then we'll have our late day news roundup. Zach Klein will be at the anchor desk this afternoon. And then we'll have hoops tonight here on WKOK. Shikellemi in action. Chief and Dave Ritchie, of course, in the suit, Kevin Herr. We'll have that for you tonight, 7:06 here on WKOK with Braves basketball. So yesterday, well, we got a great show lined up for you today. Tim Kirchin from ESPN will rejoin the show. He'll be on next hour, 4:06, to recap the National Baseball Hall of Fame Class of 19 announcement from last night. And then we'll talk sports business with our buddy Tony Knopp at 4:35.
Well, let's go local first. And it's more local, I think, than people realize. Obviously, Mike Mussina, local as local gets. As I said yesterday, boy, does he absolutely deserve it. No question about that. And the fact that he's in, he deserves it so much. Roy Halladay, you're like, hey, Philly's local. Far more local around here than I think maybe people realize. Braden Halladay, Roy's son, signed a letter of intent to play baseball for Penn State back in November. He will be here starting next year. He's in the class of 2023. So it is as local gets in terms of how people feel about it when it comes to the Hall of Fame. I think a lot of people did not realize that Braden Halladay had signed a letter of intent here because baseball has not followed, you know, on the collegiate level as closely as other sports. But yes, Braden Halladay is, and you know, it's interesting. Obviously, everyone knows the tragedy with which the Halladay families had to deal with. He had an official visit scheduled for Penn State. I don't know. I want to say a month or 6 weeks after his father had passed away, and they had scheduled it weeks and weeks ahead of time. Braden and his mom both kept the commitment and came up here when they had scheduled, even though they were given the leeway to do it. No, they still came up here. And eventually then he signed, November 27th he signed. So obviously very, very local, very personal. Or not just one, Mike Mussina, but also for Roy Halladay. And we'll talk to Tim Kirchner about this and more coming up. I mean, you'll have your second unanimous choice next year with Derek Jeter. And to me, there are just certain guys that when they go against your team, you say, oh, boy. It's two on and two out, and Derek Jeter's up. Oh, boy. Or there's two on and two out. No, okay, Harold Baines is up. I still am mystified by Harold Baines. Hey, with all due respect to a guy who had a good career with 2,700 hits and the whole thing, I'm still mystified by the Harold Baines thing. Now, Jack Morris, I'm not. I get to the final game here. It's game seven, and like, you know, and I have the option of Jack Morris pitching. Yo, I'm going to give him the ball. It says a lot. Says a lot. To me. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about certain guys, for example, when they're against your team? Let's see. Let's pick one here. When the Steelers are playing and Tom Brady's over there, how do you feel?
Oh, same thing. I'm just like, ugh. Especially when I think there's too much time left on the clock. Yes. John Smoltz had kind of the same reaction last night as they were going through the their ceremony coverage on MLB Network about, you know, you look over on the other side of the dugout or you look out who's coming in from the outfield of the mound, you see Mel Rivera, you see old number 42, and it's like, ugh, it's just not fair. Yeah. It's not fair.
Well, I will go back to obviously the Red Sox one, so I got the 2004 Red Sox video, right, DVD. And there's a point where obviously when Kevin Millar walks on the 3-2 pitch, they bring in Dave Roberts. And Rivera throws over three or four times. And then Roberts steals it. Posada actually made a really good throw. But he steals it. And then Bill Miller, who for whatever reason, I cannot explain this. Miller beat Rivera earlier that year in 2004 in extra innings. For whatever reason, he could hit Rivera. And he got a base hit up the middle and Roberts scored. And he probably had 10 blown saves against the Red Sox in his career. Now, that's out of how many times he... You know, this is familiarity, talent, things like that. And Jason Veritek says on the video, he says, I don't want to hear that we have Mariano's number. He says, nobody has Mariano Rivera's number. And he's right about that. Nobody did. There was also Dennis Leary narrates it. And there were two bases were loaded and two outs. And Leary says... And up came Derek Jeter, being Derek Jeter. That's exactly right. When you are, here we go again. Here's another great play coming up. The best ones are the ones that you expect them to be great, and either you, as a Yankee fan, you're thrilled, or as the opposing fan, you are like you're bracing for disappointment because they're going to break your heart and do something. Rivera was, he's the best. I don't usually say the best, but he was the best closer. He's best closer ever. I don't usually say best, but I just don't see anybody close enough to him. There are a bunch of really, really good ones over the course of a lifetime, a Bruce Sutter, a Goose Gossage, people like that. But there's something about Rivera that 9.8 times out of 10, he'd go to the mound and you'd sit there and go, okay, I'll just watch to watch.
Yeah, even with Trevor Hoffman, who got into the Hall of Fame last year, I think he ended up with, 605 saves, something like that. But still, that's a long distance between, you know, best ever and who would be number two.
Right. And Rivera was a one-pitch guy. you need 5,000 pitches to succeed. Nah, just if you had a really, really good one. I don't even recall. Do you ever recall Rivera being on the disabled list? Might have been. But incredibly special. Edgar Martinez had as beautiful a swing as you'd ever want to see. He hit 312, and I'm telling you, the only other swing I would compare Martinez to would be Will Clark's. Wow. Beautiful, majestic swing.
I think now with Edgar in, that's going to open up the door with more DHs that'll get their trip to Cooperstown. Maybe Big Poppy a couple years down the road.
Well, Big Poppy's going to be on the first ballot.
Sure.
You know, as long as you know, we know he tested once, and it was we're going to test 100 guys as a. This is before they had the policy in place and his name got on a list. That was in 2003. I will say this. How many times was he tested between the time they actually put the policy in, I don't know, 4 or 5, to the end of his career? He tested negative, obviously, every single time. I mean, he will be an automatic. We are seeing more and more. I mean, look, you have two specialists here. Edgar Martinez is a DH, and Mario Rivera is a relief pitcher. They're two specialists. I remember when it came. Now, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is different, obviously. But I remember Ira Miller, who has a vote, came into the broadcast booth before a game to talk to Jack. And he said, hey, he says, look, Jack, I got to ask you. He says, he says, Ray Guy's name's going to come up. And Jack said, oh, my goodness, he absolutely should be a Hall of Famer. And I was just trying to do his homework as to what contemporaries thought of somebody. Well, Ray Guy is a specialist. Well, now, let's face it, a DH is a specialist. Edgar Martinez at one point had been a third baseman, then transitioned to being a DH almost exclusively the rest of his career from his late 20s on. Mariano Rivera was a specialist. And maybe once in a while he'd be asked to get 5 outs, but for the most part was given the ball and told, give me 3 outs, that way we can all go home. So you're now seeing the recognition to me of the specialist in the game, and we're seeing more and more specialization in the game. At some point, if there is an exceptional, off-the-charts setup guy, which, by the way, Rivera was before he became the closer. If you have somebody that fills that role exceptionally for 10, 12 years and is off the charts pitching the 7th and 8th inning, does that person end up getting in? I don't know. Interesting. All right, we have, Tony Knopp today. We have Tim Kirchen today. We have a lot going on the next few days. A lot going on. Those are the two we have today, correct?
Correctamundo.
Okay. Now, we'll try and get through with the shallow, shabby lineup that you put together here. Tim's at 4:06 and Tony at 4:35. Tomorrow, Dave Sherman's going to join us from the Washington Post, Chris Trapasso, Mark Wogenrich. Friday, Keith Sargent, NJ.com on Rutgers basketball. The King returns with picks. I believe I went 0-2 for the weekend, I believe. I think I picked Kansas City, New Orleans, I believe.
I did too.
King did not, though.
Yep, he was 1-1. He had the Pats.
Brady lover. No.
So if you guys pick differently in the Super Bowl, the King will end up one game behind you in the final stats.
And what's the key words there?
One game behind in the final stats.
Exactly right. Those are the key words. Those are the key words.
One bet.
We will let the suit make a pick. Ooh, email for management. Ooh, one word, no. Okay. We'll come back with more in a moment. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Just telling me about Manny Axe playing at in Pittsburgh Valentine's weekend.
Yeah, I heard the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, they're going to be performing Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, like Valentine's weekend. And I heard with a special appearance featuring Mozart music by the one and only Emmanuel Axe.
Manny Axe to you, buddy. Manny Axe loves football. Loves football. Is fascinated. I mean, he's fascinated by the game, and he is a genius musically. He's a genius, but man, he loves football. Manny Axe.
I'd heard about that, and the first thing I thought of was the conversation that you had with Mike Reed on the show a couple of years ago, when you were talking about Jack Ham's friendship with Manny Axe.
Manny Axe. In fact, I brought it up. I brought it up to Mike. I said, if I were to tell you that like Jack and Manny Axe were really good friends, he goes, "Oh, I can't believe this," because obviously Mike knows Manny Axe, right? And I know of the conversations that Jack has had with Manny Axe. I've been a witness.
Then the second thing I thought of was, oh man, where Hammer will be at the show.
No, it's Jack Ham is such a well-rounded individual. There, I mean, the number of, I mean, everybody thinks that like we just talk football. No, far from it. There are so many items that we talk about, and that's why we get a kick out of the Manny Axe thing, because that happens to be one of the things we do talk about. It's fun. Believe me. The number of topics we talk about, I mean, you have no idea how often we've talked about the stock market, how often we've talked about industry, how often we've... I mean, there are a lot of items that we talk about, not just, you think they had a blitz on third down? Now, once we get to the broadcast, you don't see us doing that. I mean, obviously, we're not out there. Yeah, we're not talking about that stuff, but still. All right. Tim Kirchin coming up in the next half hour, or in the next hour. Looking forward to that. Be a lot of fun to talk with him about the Baseball Hall of Fame, because there's certain elements I want to talk to him about. One of them is, in today's era compared to an era gone by, do you think more about, as a tiebreaker, postseason performance if two guys are relatively close in your mind? Because there's so many more postseason games today than ever before. It's not like the era of, oh, great, you know, I mean, Ted Williams got to his one World Series. How did he do? He hit 200.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tim Kirchin, next half hour in the Hall of Fame vote, plus a couple of other issues I want to get into. And
and Tony Knopp on the business of sports with the Super Bowl coming up in the final half hour. So we have a big show today. And tomorrow, writer from the Washington Post on baseball, Mark Wogenrich in Allentown, Chris Trapasso on the show. Friday, Keith. But you know what? For the players, there are two things that come into play for the players. Everybody's talking about the two-week hype and so on. In reality, there's not 2 weeks of hype anymore. Maybe 30 years ago there was. Now you don't really see people really start really talking about the Super Bowl till media day on Tuesday. You know, really is the way it's worked out. For the players, it gives them a chance, an extra week to heal up, so these teams can be as healthy as possible before they play the game. Now, you look, and the biggest reason why is that the game is into February, okay? Because it's in February that puts it into the February sweeps month for the network that has it. November, February, May are the three primary sweeps months for setting ad rates. So the Super Bowl gets into February, so that's big. So now you have the 2 weeks. Players can heal up. They can be as healthy as possible going in. And this is also the week where if you're a player and even a coach, you get to settle all of your ticket issues. Because you've got so many people, you know, making requests. What do you do with your family? How do you handle this thing? There are a lot of things that have to be taken care of. And they, you know, and now you can spend this week getting ready, making sure you got your game plan in play. Your players have some time to go out and they can take care of all the tickets they need to take care of. Accommodations for family, if need be. And it does give you that time to do that. So, in terms of the hype of it, how much hype? I mean, think of recent years. How much hype is in this week for the Super Bowl? You know, I mean, that bye week. Virtually nothing. There's always a replay on Monday, maybe bleeding into Tuesday on the championship games. But then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so not much. Monday, oh, you may get a story on the arrival of the teams in Atlanta. But then it's the media day, and then from that media day forward, then it becomes a full-court press on the Super Bowl.
Actually, here in the last year or two, they changed the Tuesday media day, and they moved it up to a Monday night primetime event.
Yeah.
I think that's for the last 2 or 3 years, I think they started doing that. Right. And the same, 50 minutes, hour, and 10 minutes availability for both teams, and wedge in some entertainment between the two.
Right. I mean, it's and the entertainment, I'll tell you, the entertainment part, well, way back when, remember Michael Jackson played with the Rose Bowl? I think it was the Cowboys-Bills halftime, and it was awesome. Everybody loved it.
Yeah, it was either, 92, 93?
Yeah. But, you know, to be honest with you, what's happened is the games become really, really good, and I mean, who the heck was it Imagine Dragons? Was the college football playoff? Is that right?
That is correct. They performed at halftime earlier this month, yes.
I watched 60 seconds of it and said, I'm out of here. And, you know, it wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, same thing with it. Who's doing this? Maroon 5? Does that sound right?
Yes, that's the halftime for Super Bowl. Yes, it's going to be Maroon 5 and Travis Scott and some other hip-hop performer.
I mean,
I think they're starting to run out of options for the halftime
show. It's more than running out of options. Okay, make the thing 12 minutes and get the teams back out there. Like it's a normal game. I mean, having them sit in there for a long period of time, I think, skews the game in some ways. And again, we're at a point now, this is not the Super Bowls of the 70s and 80s where
Okay, and it's Denver and the 49ers blowout. It's the Chargers against the 49ers blowout. You know, I mean, we've had so many blowouts in Super Bowls over the years, but really starting with, you know, like when Denver beat the Packers, we started to go through a series of really, you know, every once in a while you get a Ravens-Giants game. But we've gone through a series of really, really good games, don't you think? Like,
yeah,
really,
yeah.
I mean, just good games.
Now, I'm concerned about this one just with the fact that, all of a sudden the Saints were up early last Sunday, 13-0 over the Rams. And I'm just kind of wondering if the Patriots get off to a fast start in this game, it may be very difficult for the Rams to catch up.
But we'll see.
We really haven't had a blowout since the game in the Meadowlands at MetLife Stadium with Broncos,
yeah.
Seahawks.
Yeah. And that was the media day I went to.
That's right.
That's the only Super Bowl media day I've ever been to.
Well, when they caught Peyton in the end zone on that safety, that was the.
Well, he snapped the ball over his head. You're like, yeah, okay, this is really going great. As soon as you saw that, you thought something is not right here. And they got blown out in that game. But everything else has been. Malcolm Butler at the goal line, the Eagles running the Philly special. I mean, every time you've turned around, there's been either a really good game, a signature play, the Giants stopping the Patriots from going 19-0, the Giants beating the Patriots in Indianapolis. I mean, you've had a lot of, you know, the Steelers Super Bowl championship, then the Packers beating the Steelers. I mean, because, I mean, the Steeler-Cardinal game, great games. I mean, I don't know if we need to take that. I mean, it's to the point now where the Super Bowl commercial thing was really, really cool for a period of time. Halftime was really, really cool. But I think both of them were byproducts of mediocrity of the game. Now the games have become the vast majority, 90% of Super Bowls in the last 25 years. Have been really, really good games to the point where, like, look, throw a band out there at halftime. I'm talking like a marching band, right? Go back to the studio, do the deal, get back to the game. Oh, and by the way, I mean, the last couple of years, to be honest with you, no offense, but I know ad people and so forth, but I don't sense even remotely people getting as jazzed up about the Super Bowl commercials as in past years because the game's been good. I mean, the Patriots-Atlanta game goes to overtime. Eagles game winning last year was incredible. It's down to the final possession. I mean, Carolina-Denver was kind of anticlimactic. But I don't see people get, oh, a Super Bowl. You still have people polling Super Bowl commercials, but there's not the same feeling in the room as, hey, let's check. No, it's like, hey, let's go back to the game. Games become... And I think they're missing the boat that I don't think they realize it is. They're trying to use the same formulas in past. And that halftime thing, it's too long. It's too drawn out. You know, and remember, in the NFL, you get 12 minutes. How long's halftime? 30?
25 or 30, yeah.
See, now you've changed up the dynamic of how the game is played on a normal basis for these teams. And no offense, I'm sure Maroon 5 will do a great job, but I could care less if they're out there. Now, I'm not as musically inclined as you are. Maybe you love it. I don't want to take away something you love, but to me, it's like, oh, just get out of here.
Yeah, we'll watch it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I won't. It's like, yeah, I could care less. But I could care less about the halftime entertainment for a long time. And I am a different case. I know that. I've always been more about the game anyway. So I am in a different category, and I know that. But I'm starting to sense from other people, too, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who's singing the national anthem? Is it Gladys Knight?
That's correct.
I'm sure she'll be great.
Atlanta native, right.
I'm sure she'll be great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Place your bets over under as to what the time will be. Suit will probably have it clocked in at 1:55.
See, like, he's into all this. He's into all this stuff.
Yeah.
All right? He's into all of it, which is an indication to me that I'm right. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Did Billy Joel ever do a halftime for the NFL? Or was he too busy making his 250th appearance at Madison Square Garden?
Well, if he did the Super Bowl, it would be before that, before the residency. So I'd have to check on that. I don't know if he did or not.
I don't think he has. Obviously, let's see, Katy Perry has. I know that. She did a couple. Didn't Madonna do it once? She did the one in Indianapolis, right? Well, as I said,
no, at one point, Billy performed the national anthem. I think it was 2015. Oh. The national anthem did that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Very cool.
Let's see. There was a combination. He was kicked around to possibly be the halftime entertainment back in 2013, but then they went with someone else. Mm. Maybe that was the year that Springsteen did it.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Or no, Springsteen did the one. No, Springsteen was on 10 years. Springsteen did the halftime show 10 years ago when the Steelers beat Arizona in that game in 43. Super Bowl 43. That one was Bruce.
Wow, it's like a perfect day for you.
Yeah,
Springsteen and the Steelers. Springsteen and the Steelers all in one day.
I think probably one of the greatest halftime performances was Prince, and that was the halftime of the Colts-Bears Super Bowl. And he pretty much performed that nonstop in the rain for 12 minutes. Isn't that the funny part? A normal halftime is 12 minutes, but the performance on stage is 12 minutes.
Right. Well, they have to assemble the stage. They have to disassemble the stage. I mean, that's where the extra 12 minutes comes into play. I mean, and they do it as efficiently as possible. Everybody's always said that halftime show was among the best ever, and I never saw a second of it. Like, yeah. Because, no offense, I was never a big Prince person, so. And not because of anything other than, sometimes you like something and sometimes you're like, So, that's just me. Again, I'm not, you're the one that's massively into the music, so. And it's not that I don't enjoy music. But, okay, national anthem's over. Play. Okay, locker room's over.
No, you just pick your spots when you're up for some music.
Absolutely. Nobody likes the spot I pick. No, I'm just kidding. Well, but that'll be next week. Again, there's always talk about the on Monday and Tuesday, but then see the talk dies down. There's not going to be much talk today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You're right about Monday. This is where, again, I think that they got to be careful about getting too carried away with some things. For example, putting the media thing in prime time. Oh, I realize that they have their own network, so I've got that part. Yeah. But, like, okay. Well, we'll talk to Tim Kirkchen in the next half hour about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Four in, including Montoursville's Mike Mussina, who absolutely deserved it. I think he got 76% of the vote. Now, the closest that missed happened to be not Bonds or Clemens. Closest that missed happened to be Curt Schilling. Bonds and Clemens, neither one eclipsed the 60% barrier. And again, you need to get the 75%. Tim Kirkchen, in the ballot that he released, did vote for Bonds and Clemens, and he also voted for Gary Sheffield, too. What's interesting is when you look at next year's Hall of Fame ballot, it is one thing to sit there and say that Derek Jeter is a 100% guy and should be. But when you look at the rest of the first-time names on there for next year, I don't see anybody that has any traction to get to stay on the ballot for a long period of time. Next year's names are not, outside of Jeter, are not mind-blowing. And that's, I think, then starts to open the door for those who came up short this year. Now, it doesn't mean that Jeter can't be the only guy that goes in next year. I mean, of the ones voted in by the Baseball Writers Association of America. Clemens and Bonds, by the way, I believe still have three more years to go on the ballot. And
yeah, outside of Jeter for next year, you have first year of eligibility for Bobby Abreu, Jason Giambi, Cliff Lee, Rafael Furcal, Eric Chavez, Josh Beckett, Brian Roberts, Alfonso Siriano, Paul Konerko, Brad Penny, Raul Ibanez, Jose Valverde, Alex Gonzalez, and Heath Bell, to name a few.
The only one of that group that I think will ever get in, and it'll be done by the modern day committee, is Bobby Abreu. That's my opinion. Bobby Abreu is the only, he will never get 75%, but I think that the modern day committee, the one that put Harold Baines and Jack Morrison, Abreu might be the one that can, out of that group. But there's nobody else there. Who else is there, Sean? Who would you vote for besides Jeter? I mean, Jeter's obvious. Jeter's 100% guy. Look, this is a Red Sox fan saying that Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter are absolute 100%.
Wow.
None. There isn't a single guy there. Who?
Probably the one that would jump off the page for me would be Cliff Lee, but he only won 143 in his career.
Nah, not enough traction. If you gave me a choice, let's just take the guys that if you gave me a choice between Mike Mussina, big game, and Cliff Lee, big game, it's easy for me. I pick Mike Mussina with complete ease. It's game seven. I need to win. I hand the ball to Mike Mussina. Now let's talk about somebody who didn't get in this time but got 60%. If you gave me a choice between Cliff Lee and Curt Schilling, I'm going to go with the 11-2 guy. I'm going to go with Curt Schilling. Jack Morris got in. Game 7, Jack Morris, Cliff Lee. So far, Cliff Lee's 0-3.
I'm on baseballreference.com just looking at the three players with first year of eligibility that hit the most home runs. Adam Dunn is also be his first year of eligibility. 462 home runs. Paul Konerko, 439. Jason Giambi with 440 homers.
Right. And see, but none of them are going to have it. I'd vote for Fred McGriff before I'd vote for any of them.
Alfonso Siriano, 412.
Yeah, again, Fred McGriff before I'd even think about any of them. I wouldn't even consider it. Not one of those guys, to me, will get more than 40% of the vote next year. In fact, I think most of them are going to be in the 20s. Derek Jeter will be 100. I think it opens the door for, you know, for Bonds and Clemens, this could be a surge for them. It opens the door for Curt Schilling. Could open the door for a guy like Larry Walker or Omar Vizquel.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.